Hello, welcome to episode number 209 of the Apologue Podcast. I'm your host, Simon Head. Today's podcast is brought to you in part by BetterHelp.com. Get affordable, private, online counseling anytime, anywhere. Talk to a licensed professional therapist online today, and you can do that if you enter the code word Apologue when you go to BetterHelp.com/Apologue. You can start a 7-day free trial and use that code word, and that will get you in there. Come on, people. Let's do it. Let's get therapied up. It doesn't hurt. Don't be ashamed. You know, you can do this on your own terms and your own time. So go ahead and do that. I didn't mean to say go ahead, by the way, because I hate that. Don't go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. So go do that. Okay. Thanks to the Amazon shoppers that are supporting the show. It's Christmas season, and time's ramping up, and it's time to go buy stuff. You can support the show by going to apologue.ca/Amazon or apologue.ca/US Amazon. You can do the old-fashioned way, too, by going to apologue.ca and click on those banners located on the right side. Locate your country, whether you're from Canada, the United States, or the UK. Bookmark those links, and every time you shop on Amazon, use those links and shop and support the show. Cost you no extra money. I'd like to thank everybody for helping me out on Patreon. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/apologue. You can pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees, and you can cancel anytime. Go buy a t-shirt at apologue.ca/shop, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. Give it a great review and give it 5 stars, please. It always helps out in the rank of things, and it does help the show put it into a different light if a lot of people like and support the show that way. You can like the show. Speaking of like, you can like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/apologuepod. Follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666. The Twitter was intentional. Today on the show, I have Mr. Jesse Makowicz, who is from the band Quarter Tank. He also was in a band called Bad Blood. He also played for a very brief period in the band Trigger Happy, which is a band I think half of Toronto played in. And also, they've just put out a new EP called Igniter. They're doing a release show on December 6th, which is coming up. It's coming up in 3 days from now. And they have a bunch of new songs they put out on Bandcamp, and I'm going to play one of those songs right now. And here it is. The song is called Igniter. It's the title track of their new EP, Igniter, from the band Quarter Tank. Quarter Tank. The album is called Igniter. The song is called Igniter. The band is called Quarter Tank. and go to Cherry Cola's Rockarolas in Toronto on December 6th, and you can go see their record release. Go to the record release party and go see them play some music. They're good people, good folks, good dudes. So here is Mr. Jesse Makowicz on the Apollo Podcast. Me a shot I got of you right now, actually. It's just the top of your car, and I see a little bit of snow. And
oh, you want me to open my sunroof? There you go, man. Is that even better?
Oh, right, man. On. So how's life down there in Toronto right now? It looks snowy.
It is definitely snowy. It's snowy, icy, first time for everybody, and it's, you know, everyone's driving like it's the first snow of the year. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty nasty. So, you know, whatever. Yeah. It is what it is. I drive a Subaru, so I'm good to go.
So, I've started, by the way. So your band, Quarter Tank, it's been what, since 2008?
2006, yeah. 2006 is when we folded the last band and, you know, started off with the Tank and, you know, pretty much the same members started it right away. Johnny McNabb, Christian Wagner, myself, and did that for a few years and then mm-hmm. kind of got sick of being, you know, I got that singing bug out of me and of playing bass and singing again. And I was like, okay, we recorded a full length album essentially that, of course, nobody heard. Right. And then, you know, I'm like, hey, Bill, you're singing in a band now, right? So, you know, our good friend Billy Gregory, you know, he's like, okay. And that was it, you know. So now we're the four piece. And yeah, and that was 2011. So, you know, we had a good 5-year run as the three of us. And we had a lot to work out after the demise of the last band. So, you know, hence, you know, then the Tank was born. That was it. So
yeah, it's very cool to hear Bill sing. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, usually,
definitely,
you don't hear Bill sing. That for me, I'm not used to it.
Well, exactly. Like, you know that crazy, you know, suburban rapper kid, you know, like,
yeah.
And then turned into, you know, heavier screamo, like screaming kind of, you know, singing guy. And it was always there, you know, like on the last Bad Blood record that we did together, there's a couple of songs on there, especially a song called Dark Sky, where Bill and Jeremy both sang a lot on it. And I'm like, okay, I knew this guy could sing. Mm-hmm. I was just waiting to hear when that was going to be, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and then in the Tank, it kind of came out. We did a little kind of pop punk band in between. It was called The Death of Us, and it was Johnny on guitar, I played drums, Bill sang, and that was the first thing before he was in the Tank. I believe it was before he was in the Tank, and he was singing, you know, he was mm-hmm. doing his thing with that, and it was really cool to hear him do that. So in this band now, that's why with Igniter, with the new record, he was just like, I know what I want to do, I just have to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and you knowing him for as long too, you know how he's kind of, you know, he holds back a little bit because he doesn't want to suck at it, right? So, you know, and who really does?
Totally.
Right? So,
I've known Bill since the early 90s. Like, he's one of my oldest people that I've known in our scene, that from, you know, from that east side of Toronto scene, which there was a dividing line. You know, where did you grow up?
So I grew up, I'm born and bred in Toronto. Yeah. So I'm a East End Toronto boy, Greenwood and Queen. But then because my parents divorced early, so I spent time back and forth between West End Toronto, like High Park area, mm-hmm. And then back and forth between, you know, parents and, you know, went to all sorts of different schools. I went to like three different high schools, you know, so, I didn't get, you know, tapped into the Durham scene until Al Nolan and I started working together became friends within our old lives as a, you know, publicists mm-hmm. and doing that back in the mid 90s, Almighty Trigger Happy days. And that was my introduction to, to these yahoos out in the Durham, right? It was like, there was him, and I, you know, I already kind of knew him a bit, became better friends, but then he was the one that introduced me to, you know, his friend Jeremy Dove, right? And he's like, oh man, you gotta, this guy's trying to start a band, and, you know, so, and at the time, I still didn't drive or anything, so I used to have to take the fucking GO train out to, you know, Pickering, you know, to meet these guys, and then drive out to Oshawa to practice with them, you know, so that whole Durham thing was weird, man. You know, it was really weird to tap into because it was so foreign to downtown Toronto boy, right? So.
Absolutely, yeah. I forgot you when you did publicity in those times, and I think that's the first time I actually met you was in that part of Toronto when you were doing that, and that was like that scene, that Durham scene is like, I was talking to Al about this a few years ago about it, but there's a lot that came out of that, you know, and you know, Trigger Happy kind of sort of carried the torch a lot on it, and then there was bands like, I don't know, like there's like Mal Havoc. Yeah, whoa.
Mal Havoc was the one for us. Like, yeah. Mal Havoc was the one for us when the first time we ever saw Mal Havoc, we're like, whoa, this guy's fucking insane.
Yeah.
You know, and we loved it, right? Because we're all like, we're all metalheads, right? Yeah. And, you know, like I've always been into, you know, punk music, and I've been into hardcore always, but you know, I've always been a metalhead. Like that's my, and I'll never deny that. Anybody that knows me knows that that's my thing. You know, I started hanging out the Durham thing guys, you know, Jeremy's like, so when are you going to cut your hair? You know, that was their first question, right? Like you're going to hang, you can't have that hair, you know, it's got to go, you know? And I, of course I caved in. So, but you know, it was, there were so many bands from that scene that we really liked. Like I owned Disturb, was the whole Epidemic thing, you know, like Sumner's putting out all these bands for them, from their, what was the other one? There's another good metal band.
Was Monster Voodoo Machine?
Well, there's Epidemic. The Voodoo Machine connects. Splatterpunk was another one, right? Yeah. That's the full metal guys. I went because of one old band used to play. But there's a lot of good bands that came out of there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, but I had never known, you know, the other guys, right? At all. Yeah. Except for, you know, I knew of Al because, you know, I think I saw Trigger Happy once and I saw yet another Posse once, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, because they weren't metal, so... You know, so,
Well, early at another Posse was definitely, I was thinking, because I just drove by where Hella Music used to be, like where Pete used to have a studio, and I thought how cool that little space was too, up by north on Bathurst, and where that original Pete Hutchins studio was. And
I never went to that one.
Yeah, I remember the day that they were recording that sort of demo, that Yet Another Posse demo, and Bill bought like a keyboard sampler thing and was like unabashedly taking samples, like Hot-Blooded by Foreigner, and like just taking samples and just making them into songs. And it was like
amazing.
It was like, yeah, like you could tell, like as they're writing these songs, like how awesome technology turned into. I mean, and this is like 1991 or two or whenever.
It was hard to pull that shit off. Totally. It was it wasn't easy. Like you had to learn how to do it, you know? I remember my first 4-track recording I tried to make, I didn't know how to program the drum machine.
Yeah.
So being a drummer, I just played it like a drummer on those little tiny pads that are half the size of your thumbs, you know? Because I'm just like this, I still have it and I still listen. I'm going, how did I pull this off? Because I didn't know, like technology in that sense was just so foreign to me. So that's a very Bill thing that, to do, I would say, you know?
Yeah.
Knowing him now for that long, right?
Yeah, I mean, Bill's always had that sort of entrepreneurial kind of spirit to him, too. I mean, just starting something from nothing. And I think Bill should come on the show one day, because
he should.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he's definitely a part of the history of what became, I mean, my history. I mean, my past.
100%.
And all that stuff. And to talk to somebody who sort of went through it as well. And, you know, and it's, you know, it's being in a band when you're 20 is not like being in a band when you're 40, you know, and
completely different animal.
Yeah.
Big time.
You have kids, right? You know,
Yeah, two kids, right? Yeah. Bill's got two kids. You know, the two of us, you know, we can relate to a lot of things. His kids are a little bit older than mine. Mm-hmm. You know, we both have girls, you know, which is kind of cool too, you know. And, you know, it is completely different because it's no longer, you know, the you're no longer on the quest for success, yeah. You know, and for stardom, you know. And, you know, that ship sailed a long time ago. And, you know, it's not to say that it couldn't happen. You know, you never know, but it's not the end game anymore. You know, it's not even close. I love playing music. You know, I like hanging out with my boys. I like the fact that, you know, we're still friends, you know, mm-hmm. and that we can still reinvent ourselves musically and still push ourselves. Fuck, man, Johnny McNabb and I have been playing straight together now for 19 years, you know, like yeah. It's bizarre. Like we laugh about it so many times because we're both the last person on earth that we would think that almost 20 years later that we're playing together in a band, you know? So totally. Still, totally. You know, it's pretty funny, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a bit of the history with Five Knuckle Chuckle back in those days too. So early,
big time.
Recordings with Graham, Raw Energy and all that good stuff. But, I mean, like, how hard was it to, like, put a CD out back then, and how easy is it now? I mean, it's like, it's day and night, right?
It's insane. It is, it's pretty, for guys like in our age bracket, it's really cool because we know the struggles that we used to go through, right? Mm-hmm. In every sense of, you know, putting out an album, you know, from the creation to the financial aspect of it, like scrounging money, going, oh man, okay, three of the five of us can afford it. You know yeah. what I mean? And how much pricier it was because it was essentially new technology. And well, not really new, but for us it was. You're not putting yeah. out demo tapes
for indie
anymore.
Bands, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then whereas now, like us, like we just got our Igniter CDs made because we feel like, yeah, sure. CDs aren't like the hip thing anymore, but I'm driving a car with a 6-disc changer. I want a fucking quarter tank CD in it. You know what I mean? Like, that's yeah. it. So I will be selfish and I can afford to do it now. So,
yeah.
you know, so, but then other people want it as well too. And I like, you know, having something to hold and to look at. So it's so nice in a way that it's so much easier where we can just send the guy a load up JPEG file or whatever the hell it is, you know, up to them. They take the music and boom, next thing you know, 7 days later, I have, you know, 100 CDs, you know, for a few hundred bucks.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, like, absolutely. It. And it used
it's
to, yeah,
insane.
It used to be because of the, I don't know what people with CD manufacturing places, because for that reason, the runs are much lower now, I bet, like than when. So, for instance, 20 years ago, you might have had to press 1,000 to keep it just within.
Yeah.
To keep it within. And I'm not ashamed to say I got about 500 Foursquare discs in my back little baby barn that I'll never sell. Like,
exactly.
Ever.
Like, Bill was the one that kept all that stuff, too. Like, I think up until a few years ago, we still had, like, a box of Ring and Ears compilation CDs, you know? Like, yeah. because we had to, I think, get, like, 250 or 500 of them pressed, right? And we just gave them away,
yeah,
because who wants to have those? And then soon as, you know, the introduction of, like, soon as Napster came along and now you had MP3s and everything, it was all over. Like, nobody mm-hmm. wanted them anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But it is I still kind of like the fact now that it is easy to do, right?
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
the CD.
Well, there's more guys like you out there who want to hold something like that. Like, they want to have their music that they can put under their pillow, like, quite literally.
Yeah.
You know, and have something that they can take and listen to, and, you know, and I'm with you on that. You know, it's interesting, and this whole vinyl resurgence and everything, it's sort of like
I'm down with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a lesser version of vinyl, because vinyl is still expensive, like crazy expensive too.
It really is. You know, like, that's in the, that we have the plan for that, because, you know, with the album art, you know, that, you know, that Swinburne did, you know, he just killed it. Of course, it's Adam, right? Like, that's just, you wouldn't expect anything less from him. How can you not have that on vinyl? You know what I mean? Like, and that's what we're like, we don't care what it takes. I don't care if it's like 2 years after the fact if we can't afford it until then, you know, because it's a heavy expense, you know, it really is. Out of it's almost similar to like what CDs cost for us in the 90s, you know, it's the same kind of thing where you look and go, whoa, my God, you're like, you know, talking like a couple of grand, right? You know, for just a few albums. But honestly, I feel it's worth it, right? Because I want to have, all of the guys in the band were like, oh, what did this look so awesome and on the red vinyl, you know? It's like, okay, well, now it's got to happen, right? You know, so if somebody wants to pick up the record, you know, just so we can do that, you know, we'll sell our souls.
Totally. So working with Critchley, that's an interesting combination because...
Weird, eh?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds amazing, by the way. Like, it's a great sounding album. It's super full.
It's, it's, you would never think that that would be the marriage, eh? And because, so how that came about is because... Johnny did some work for John as a contractor. So, he did some work for John's house, you know, through another friend. And, you know, we all knew of him from 13 Engines and, you know, and that he, so Johnny's like, yeah, when we were going to do the first tank demo with Bill, we said, oh, let's just go. He's like, why don't we try Critchley's place out, right? Green Door Studios. So I don't know. Have you ever been to his studio?
No, never been there.
No? So his studio is amazing. It's literally in his backyard. Is him and his father designed it and converted. He converted it in his two-car garage into a studio.
Wow.
Right? In the back laneway. And it is so warm and comfortable. And John's just such an easygoing guy. And he really knows his shit. And the first time we went in there as a Rush, we weren't really prepared or anything. We needed something out, right? Mm-hmm. Here's, you know, we got the singer now. It's been a little bit of time. Let's get something out. I think it was like two years or something. We needed to get something out. So we went and did that. And, you know, whatever. It was what it was, you know. But it wasn't using John to his potential, right? Mm-hmm. So then, you know, the second album we did with Ian Blurton. And we did it in his studio, and you know, it went well. You know, it wasn't like the most comfortable of environments.
Was that the place down by Cherry Beach?
Down at Polson, Cherry Beach, right? And reason why we can say that is because that was my first practice space as a musician when I was like 14 years old. Was down there, you know, and so you know, and then Bad Blood practiced there as well too, and. You know, like I have a lot of time spent in there. I fucking hate that place, you know, so much. So the fact that that's where the studio was, I never got to enjoy Chemical Sound, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's where it was. So going back to Critchley's was really on our radar for this record, you know, right from the beginning of talking about it. Because we wanted to do it. And it was the best thing that we did. And honestly, we'll probably never, as this band, record anywhere else ever.
That's amazing.
Like that's just where we are. We on the last record we recorded it with Ian. We had another guy mix it. We were gonna use the same guy to mix it, and we're like, what are we doing? Like John's like owns this record. Like it's his. It's so good, you know. And we spent a long time on it. Like we recorded it for a year.
Oh yeah,
20 minutes of music for a year, man.
I know the feeling.
Okay. How fucking insane is that?
I know.
It's just, who does that? You know?
I've got my hand up. I do.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like we did, and we didn't feel bad about it. We went thousands of dollars over our budget. We got shit from everybody about it, you know, except for John, of course.
Yeah,
right.
Of course.
Because he, you know, it's like, you know, putting food on the table, and he wanted to make the record that he wanted to make. Right.
Yeah.
And so did we. And that's why we didn't settle for anything, you know, less than what we put out. You know, we did most of the vocals were executed for the first time in the studio out of like some big, you know, record company band, you know, rock star band. We did it that style for the most part, and it worked out. It took a lot longer, but it worked out well, you know. And so we didn't want to just put out this half-ass record. And like you said, it sounds phenomenal. Like it sounds big and warm and round, and like it's just... It's ballsy, and it just, you can hear everything, you know. It's, we couldn't have been happier with the end result.
Yeah. Yeah. The drum sounds alone is just like, it's like this sounds very well put together, which is a tough thing to do with, you know, a budget. You know, if you have a budget, it's like,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, and we did.
Yeah. Yeah.
For 5 minutes.
Yeah. And it's, you know, as technology gets a little easier to control, it's still, you still need somebody like with a set of ears to kind of pull it together. And that's the thing.
Well, you're an engineer yourself, yeah. And you record bands and you record yourself and you do all that as well too. But isn't there something about going to a studio and just having somebody record for you?
I don't know the feeling.
It takes you back to be...
I don't know.
So you've always done it from the get-go, right?
Yeah, except for once when we got a Factor grant to record. And we recorded at Chemical Sound. And so we mixed it in Vancouver. Like, it was a rock and roll experience. You know, we got some money.
Amazing.
But that, I agree with you. That was like one of those... When it was time to sit in the recording studio into the mixing room and watch Dave Ogilvy mix our record, I spent so little time in the studio. I was playing video games. I was like, I am living this place. Like, as we,
yay!
You know, I'm enjoying this and I'm going to revel in this sort of beautiful, not having to do anything. You know, there was one moment where we're in Chemical and John went to go to the bathroom and I'm like, oh, I'll punch this vocal. So I'm punching the vocal and then I look back and he's behind me in the couch. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing this for? So I'm like, get back in your seat and go to work, monkey. And so
well, there's weird stuff that happens. Like with this record, it was the weirdest thing in the world where for the first time, I'm like, okay, so what do you mean you're mixing it on your own? Yeah, you guys aren't going to be here. Really? Like, you know, like from the back in the old days of everybody's in the control room. Okay, we got to go mix today, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was it. And yeah. No, he mixed it. He would send us mixes. You know, we would, you know, listen to them, go over all the takes, you know? And you know, that's how the album was mixed.
That's the way to do it.
It was really kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
Because Quarter Tank at the beginning, because Christian is also an engineer and he recorded, you know, so many different things, you know, and we worked with so many different engineers within our own bands, right? Like the first Dynamite record that we did, you know, because Jeff Beardall was in the band at the time, also an engineer, you know, playing producer on that as well too. And then Christian would record us. We pretty much recorded everything after that, except for the first Quarter Tank demo. Like, we recorded so much music that nobody's ever heard before. Just, like, wasted fucking music, like, big time, you know? Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, some of those songs that were recorded maybe played in some, you know, some version of a band that we're in are on this record.
Yeah.
You know? And it's because we've kind of, I don't know, it's not an ego thing or whatever, but we're just like, we feel like we kind of write timeless music in a way, because obviously we're still liking it if, you know, one song in particular on the album we wrote in 2000.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
You know, but nobody's ever heard it, so why the fuck are we going to waste it? You know? Yeah. No, this song rules, and it's been like, it's in its fourth version or fifth version now, and we finally got it right. So now everyone's got to hear it, right?
Totally. Totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I play in a band and I record all the music for it, and it's, and I made a point to tell the band, like, I'm not going to be the guy that sits in the recording studio recording while you guys are tracking beds. So I actually changed the whole recording situation so I actually could track guitars while we were recording. And it actually turned into me a better feeling recording because we're all playing at the same time. And it's something that was missing on, like, now you hear it, you don't know, kind of like you guys just getting someone to record the record for you. It's sort of like, oh, okay, that's the way to do it, because it feels better that way. You feel more validated, I guess, right?
For sure. And we've always recorded, you know, live, you know, I'm, you know, overdub everything. But it's got to be that live feel. You got to capture what the band actually sounds like, you know, and what the band feels like, as far as I'm concerned. And that was a beautiful thing about John, is that, you know, it was just, everything about it was perfect, man. It all worked out. Like, we had a really good time. It was really weird for us because it's the first time with a different drummer in, you know, 12 years,
right.
You know, of, you know, so that was kind of weird as well too, to get used to, because it was not too long after joining the band where it's like, okay, man, like we got to record these songs because it was time. Mm-hmm. And luckily our, you know, luckily Dean is, you know, seasoned vet, you know, seasoned, you know, scenester as well too, like us, and just, you know, a pro drummer. So he could pull it off and we knew that he could.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Obviously if we had more time with him in the band, would it sound, you know, different? Probably, but that was kind of the beauty of it, is that he was still so fresh, and it was like, for all of us, that nervous energy as well too, going into it, right?
Yeah.
And I can speak for myself too. Like, you know, I was like, oh my God, I got this wicked drummer that is playing with me now. I can't suck, you know, like I'm his partner, right? Yeah. Even though he plays with the guitars, I got to play with him, and you know, I don't want to suck, right?
So, yeah.
You know, it was really exciting, but it all came together in that little garage studio, man. It was amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So what's, so you guys got some shows coming up, right?
Got some shows, got the video album release, you know, kind of an official thing, more, you know, like a good little excuse to get everybody out in one place and hang out for a night. And it's that's how you have to do it as older dudes now, right? Yeah. You have to make an event so everybody has something to come out for, right? Unfortunately, it's, you know, it's the way that just everything is now like that. So, yeah, so anyways, that's a good night booked up with Dragged In and the Exploders, that are, you know, old neighbors at the space of ours as well too. Mm-hmm. And both killer bands, right? So it'll be a really cool bill. And yeah, we're finally, it's nice to be excited about an album again, about getting out to play again, you know. And we booked a bunch of out of town shows. We got Hamilton and London in January, and then, you know, branching out from there. Hopefully going to go out in the East Coast in the spring. It's kind of something we've been talking about for a couple of years. And I think this year we're actually going to make it happen, because Bill's got, you know, a bunch of buddies out in New Brunswick, and he wants to get out there and play, you know? And,
yeah.
You know, we know it'll be pretty, you know, cool shows, and, you know, I want to do it as well too. And why not? Well, we can, right? It's cool to be like, you know, at our age now where we can still have that interest, and people are like, holy fuck, these guys still shred. Right. And that's how, you know, we want people to look at us, not like we're standing up there, like stand still playing the bass, you know, like, you know, we're still giving her, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, for
that's
sure.
That's what it says. So it's nice to have these things, you know, going on, and, you know, working with a publicist now that, you know, as you know, that we've known for a long time, and that now we finally have a product for her to work with. And be like, hey, you want to, you know, do something together? And it's like, yeah, man. And so the timing on it is all feels really good now. And it's a feeling that we haven't had for a long time, man. You know, it's really bizarre. I think the last time for us might have been around, you know, for at least Johnny and I, about 2000, 2001, you know, it was the last time to feel like this.
Yeah, and if you give up that, don't give up, but if you understand the concept of what music means to you rather than what it should mean to other people, that's a big thing. Like, you cross that boundary and go, you know what music means to me? I don't care what it means to you. I know what it means to me, and that's how I'm going to perceive myself. I mean, like, I'm the oldest guy in my band. I'm like almost 50, and like the youngest guy in the band's 38 or something, you know. So he's the young guy, you know, but and
I know, that's amazing.
The three out of the four of us were dads, you know, so that's the other thing where it's like, you know, well, there's a time and a place for all of this. And as our kids get older, there's going to be more time to do music stuff. So there's that sort of anticipation, which is very, very rewarding, because having kids, you sort of having kids and being a rock and roll musician is obviously two separate things. And they do not mingle.
It's huge, right? Yeah. You know, for you guys, have you played for your kids, you know, played a show and your kids have come out? Yeah, I just did that for the first time in September, you know, where my girls came out and they saw dad, you know, rocking. Like, they obviously know the band, they listen to the music, they sing along, they're into it. It's not forced, you know. If you don't like it, you don't like it, you know, but they're eclectic in their tastes as well too. You know, of course, Bill drags them up on stage to sing. I'm like, dude, what the fuck, man? I don't want them up here. They're distracting, you know. So, but you know, it's the thing where that it's huge. And I was always very envious of all my other buddies that, you know, that have played shows and their kids are always all there and stuff. And mm-hmm. yeah, you know, it's something cool that I think it's really cool that your kids can watch you play, you know, and, you know, see what you're doing as, you know, as a musician at this age now.
Yeah.
You
know? It's inspiring.
You know, you're
way,
not just an old guy, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's inspiring because you're letting that person know who you were and who you are. And that, you know, these, yeah. that's a tough thing, especially with children. Like, I don't know how old your kids are, but like mine are 15 and 12. So they're getting that. Well, the 15-year-old doesn't want anything to do with me, but the 12-year-old she's still my buddy. But for her to exactly. understand who I, it's good to give them sort of an understanding of who you were in showing them now. You know what I mean? That's what being musician.
Oh, for
is.
Sure. The stories are always, you know, are always really cool. You know, like, so my girls are 8 and 10, mm-hmm. You know, and they understand. I tell them the stories, you know, the all the cool stories that they can hear, you know, and they think it's kind of cool. And you hear them tell people, and, you know, sometimes their odd friend will go, "Hey, you play in a band?" And I'm like, "Yeah, is that okay?" Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, they're just, because I don't think a lot of parents are playing in bands anymore, you know, like look at, like, I just look at our scene now. When I say I want to book a show, you know, I look at it and go, okay, what about, oh yeah, there's nobody plays anymore. What do you mean? Like, oh, just because you're, you know, in your 40s or, you know, creeping up or 50 or even in your 50s doesn't mean you got to stop playing music. Absolutely. You know, just because you had a family and you had kids and you got married doesn't mean you got to play. I never stopped playing music ever.
No,
you
me
know,
neither.
Neither of you. Like, what? No. What, are you gonna marry somebody or be hooked up with somebody that's not gonna support it? I'm sorry, music was here before you. It will be here after you too.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I had to draw the line though. I drew the line about 15 years ago when I had our first, and I sort of went, you know, I love music, but I love you more. So therefore, I had to determine what I'm going to do with music. You know, I had to put it in a compartment. You know what I mean?
For sure.
And being a musician.
Oh, we all did.
It's inherently being selfish. Is musician and selfishness kind of go hand in hand. And so for me to sort of draw that line to say, okay, well, I want to keep what I got. And I don't want, and music's not going to make me happy like mm-hmm. being, having a family and having children is. It potentially could and did, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And it's the same thing. Like, no longer was it Tuesday, Thursday practices from 7 to 11, you know, go drinking after, mm-hmm. you know, that was ancient history. You know, there was like, okay, guys, I think, you know, I can practice this week. Oh no, something came up. No, can't do it. You know? And, and it's not because, you know, of my wife or anything. It's because, you know, it's just, that's the way it goes. And plus, when you're a new dad, you just want to hang out with your baby. You know, I'm sorry. Like, you know, I'm not going to deny it. Because it's the best thing ever, you know, and it made me like crave music that much more too, because when I got to play music, you know, and I was playing in a band with, you know, dudes that were understanding because I'd already been friends with them for ages, you know, and like Johnny always says, when everybody has kids, he goes, okay, I'll see you in 3 years, you know, it's like, and it's kind of true. If you think
about it, it is totally true. More like eight.
Those first. Oh my God. It's just nuts. And like now, yeah. And you're right. Yeah. My youngest is 8. She just turned 8. And now it's like, and look at the timing with the band. It's perfect, you know, because they understand what's going on and they don't, you know, they don't need you all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, so that's been cool.
Yeah. And, you know, as you get, I mean, this was always a thing when I was 30, because I didn't really put a band together and tour until I was like 32. And last time I checked, you get better as a musician as you get older, not only because you're a better player, but you're just a better human being. I mean, you're just a more creative, self-realizing person. So therefore, the record industry doesn't really accept that or embrace it, especially the North American music scene. But it's an interesting concept because it's an industry that you need the young to sort of run it. You need the young to create the content for the people to listen to it. But there's people who've been doing it forever, like who are great musicians who just keep getting better and some poke through. I mean, you have Like Him or Hate Him, Bruce Springsteen, John Prine, Elvis Costello, like all these sort of guys that are still doing it. But that's a rarity, right?
It really is. And, you know, it's it's kind of cool when you see that. Like, you know, like I was just saying this earlier, was like, look at like the records that like say even Bad Religion and Descendants are still putting out. They're still really good records, and the music is better written, better, you know, like better ideas, I think, you know, but still maintaining the same stuff. You go into, like you're saying, like The Boss, you know, like Springsteen, they're still putting out really good music at their age. You know, they're finding different ways to reinvent themselves and still, you know, still come across as appealing to everybody and new audiences as well. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard thing, you know, like, I was telling my wife today, I was going, hey, have you heard that new Sick of It All record? Mm-hmm. And she's just like, no, I haven't listened to it yet. And she's a fan. We just went and saw them a couple months ago in Kitchener, and, you know, for the millionth time. And it's like, they're just putting out meaner and faster music in their 50s.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just, it's crazy. And, you know, but like you said, there's the people in the background. It's not, you know, 50-year-olds putting out their music. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're creating it. But it's like these young people that are like, yeah, this is what you're, you know, this is how we're going to do it. And this is how you have to do it now. Like for me, you know, I was like, you know, as a former publicist that worked in the music industry for a long time in the 1990s and then, you know, switched gears, you know, as the industry changed and got alive, you know, now trying to promote a record, which is reaching, you know, for a publicist, I couldn't do it to save my life. I'm like, what do you mean I have to send it to bloggers?
Yeah.
What is that? You mean I'm not going, I'm not taking a box with 50 envelopes in it to the mail, you know, to the post office and sending them out? Yeah. And the guy's going to listen to it in 2 weeks and then be like, yeah, I'll write something about it.
Yeah, it is a different concept now. There's like social media stuff and like how to sort of like create a buzz and people think they've got that nailed, but they don't got it nailed. No, you know what I mean?
It's all about being,
it's all about luck and having some, being right place, right time, but also being available. Because, you know, like you can write the best record in the world, but if it's stuck in your basement, no one's going to listen to it. Therefore, it's not the best record, even though, you know what I mean? It potentially could be.
Big time. And, you know, and that's kind of how, you know, we all of us in all of our, in our group of, you know, friends and our scene and that, we all thought we knew what we were doing. And I learned pretty quick when I started working in the music industry that I didn't know fuck all, right? I didn't know how to push a record. I didn't know, you know, what, I was like, oh, that's how you do it. I was like, oh, cool. All right. You know? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as that becomes your career, you know, and because that's all you're doing, you're just, you know, not making money and learning how to, you know, push records. Mm-hmm. You know, you really learned how it was going. Fast forward, you know, almost 20 years later, it's completely the opposite way to push a record, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's just, it's weird. So now to have, you know, that old knowledge and then learning, you know, not to sound like a fucking dinosaur or anything, but like this new knowledge of like, oh, okay, that's how it goes, because it's that fast world, right? Mm-hmm. This is why we, you know, put out a 20-minute record, because the attention span of your average person, you know, we got them for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're writing 2-minute songs. Like, that's it, right?
Yeah, and, totally.
And it's not a forced thing that we did, but when Bill joined the band and he's like, whoa, hold on a second. Why was that song 4.5 minutes long? You got to cut that shit in half. Because I can't sing for that long.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, anymore. Yeah. That's happening. He goes, and it's true, right? He was the one to implemented that within the band, where he's like, no, I want short songs, you know, and, you know, take this out, cut that out. And it worked, you know, and it's true. You can kind of see that. When we play live, we still have people's attention, because it's like, it's kind of fitting to the world that we live in now, where it's just like, it's so fast. Everything's so fast. You know, technology is old within a month or two, you know, it's just, it's stupid. I hate it.
Yeah.
You know, I really do in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But you have to sort of, unfortunately, play the ball game a little bit when it comes to.
You do.
The
yeah,
new way
and
of
we
doing
do.
It. Yeah. And it's the best. Yeah. It's like. It's some to find that blend between word of mouth versus buzz versus, like, these are formulas that no one has ever been able to figure out. And when someone listens to your record and if it appeals to massive, like a whole demographic of people, that's when you have a successful record. I mean, it's like it speaks to them in a way that the words don't really actually mean any make a difference. It's just like how it feels. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's where we're going with punk rock music in particular. It's just like, if it just feels legitimate, it feels real, then I will embrace it. And that's how, yep, that's how I think we're evolving in a way.
Definitely. I do too. And you know, it's really cool that with our, with like right now we're all playing with stuff and technology that we all used to dream of, you know, mm-hmm, like we're actually doing what we could never do back in the day. Like, hey man, you know what would be so cool is if we could just, like, you know, send somebody our stuff through space and they would just get it right away, mm-hmm, you know, instead of having to mail them a package. And, you know, or we could put a picture up, like take a picture and put it up right away. And, mm-hmm, you know, it's like, dude, like Instagramming, you know, your stuff as a band is important, you know, and it's like, it's a great tool for promoting. Like, and a lot of these tools that are out now, you know, I feel that, you know, back in the day, I would have loved having them, yeah, you know, to have that instant access in a way for things. And, you know, it's really true when you say that, you know, it's, you know, you can really feel the music now more so when it means something to you, you know? And that's what this record, you know, for us, that's what this record was as well too, you know, especially on a vocal level for Bill, you know, mm-hmm, and a lyrical level, you know, look at the album cover. It says it all,
yeah,
you know, like just this dude that's just in there, you know, just fucking breaking out and just like, you know, boom, it's like, it's a new beginning, mm-hmm, you know? And mm-hmm, and I think, that's the one thing a lot of people are picking up. It's a genuine record, you know, mm-hmm, it's about genuine feelings. It's not, you know, made up stories or anything. It's about, you know, it's about actual life, mm-hmm, that is, you know, taking place within the band, and it's genuine. And you can kind of feel that with the record, you know, and, yeah, I like that. I think other people relate to that as well too. So,
yeah, I can't remember who I was talking to about who sort of was an angry punker. Like 20 years ago, I said, are you more tame now? He goes, actually, no, I'm more pissed off now because there's more things to be mad at. But he's been able to, you know, put it more in perspective and put it into music rather than worry about his own personal mental health. You know, like, it's like,
exactly,
just putting it into music is the therapy that he needs to get it dealt with, you know, and being a musician, you have to kind of have to have a vent. You know,
it is. That's the, you know, I've always joked and it's not really a joke, but I've always joked, like I said, I need to go practice, you know, because, you know, me, you know, screaming into a microphone or whatever is what keeps everybody alive out there. Mm-hmm. Right. And because I'll just go nuts. And that's my outlet. You know, I'm not a fighter. I'm not, you know, I don't do, you know, other, you know, shit, you know, to get stuff up. My outlet has always been music, you know, mm-hmm, always has since, you know, I started playing music at 12 years old, you know, it's, mm-hmm, like, okay, this is cool. This feels good. Yeah, man, I'm getting, you know, getting my rocks off and I'm getting my anger out. And, you know, even as a singer and a lyricist, you know, like teenage lyricist, you're writing about shitty girlfriends and, you know, crappy friends and, you know, fuck your parents and, you know, stopping you from doing this and that. And you're getting it out, you know, and, mm-hmm, and that's what you always had. And, mm-hmm, and now you're just putting it out in a more kind of positive light, I guess, you know, yeah, maybe, you know.
Maybe even better delivered, I would say. Like,
well, that's exactly, yeah, exactly. Better delivered is right, you know. And, you know, fortunately, you know, I've been able to work with a guy who just writes, you know, incredible lyrics, you know, and delivers them, you know, top notch as well too. Mm-hmm. He always has, you know. Mm-hmm. It's always, you know, I was always very lucky to work with, you know, people that wrote good lyrics. You know, mine are always like kind of juvenile, you know. So like, yeah, you know, okay, Jesse, you're pissed off, we get it, yeah, whatever. You know, yeah, and then here's these guys. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to write lyrics anymore.
Yeah, well, lyrics are just such a complex thing. There's the simplicity is the message, and how simple the message is brought to people makes it easier to digest. So if you try, yep, to overthink a word, like early Bad Religion was like words you're like, what the fuck is he talking about? And he knows exactly, if you're smart, you know exactly what he's talking about. But
exactly,
you're not smart at 20, and I still don't understand most of Against the Grain. I don't. And
no. But, who does, right? Like,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But to have it simplest, like the simplest form of delivery, which, you know, in you're right, Bill has that knack of doing that. He can sort of lay it out and put it in this like easy to digest and easy to put your own story to, which I, that's stuff that people, you have that knack. People have that knack or they don't, you know?
Yeah. So,
yeah.
And I'm very fortunate that, you know, that I've been, you know, on this record, like, you know, he just killed it, you know, mm-hmm. like in the studio too, he smashed all those vocals off in a weekend.
Yeah.
You know, we added like layer on top of layers, but as far as like main vocals, like the dude was just on fire. And like he's, you know, as you said, you know, he finally found, after like 20 years, finally found his range of where to sing. And you know, like you said, like at the, you know, at the beginning, you're like, you know, it's weird to hear Bill sing.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, it is, you know. And as a guy that has been making music with him since 1996, you know, it's completely weird, but I've always known that it's there. And it you know, it makes me fucking proud as shit as his friend, mm-hmm. to see what he's made of himself as a singer. Like, I love it so much. Like, when the record was done, I was just like, dude, I can't believe you did this. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you mm-hmm. know, like, you know, armpit farts. Like, come on, you know, like, you know, like... You know, like that guy in his tank top, you know, just fucking, yeah, you know, being all crazy and shit, right? And it's, yeah, you know, like,
yeah.
And then, you know, putting out this, like, you know, for in my eyes, this masterpiece for him, you know, yeah. And I know he's very proud of him, yeah. Yeah, himself for it. And, you know, and we've always sang well together too. And we really sang well on this album too, you know, mm-hmm. together. And we really enjoyed that, right?
Yeah.
Pushing each other to that.
Yeah, and the guitar tones too. Like, there's, it sounds like two guitar players, but there's two different tones, and it's just, yeah, it's just, dude, it's a really well put together record. You should be proud of it, you know.
Well, you know, thanks, man. And you know, that's Johnny's had that that sound. You know, it's the Marshall Mesa Boogie, you know, combo, right? Yeah. And it's you know, it's a killer tone, and we, you know, it's just you know, I had a different tone on the record as well too. You know, I swapped out basses, you know, went from Ibanez to Rickenbacker.
Yeah,
know,
I saw so the Rickenbacker in the picture. I was like, yeah, it's 4001, man. Woo-hoo.
That's it. You know, it's, you know, it was the dream to have that. And, yeah, and it really made such a difference on the record. Yeah. You know, it really changed the tone of it. Went from it changed it from being a more metallic band to, as you said, a nice warm round, you know, big sounding band, you know, and especially with a big drum kit in there as well too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, it was nice to put out a record that just sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, well, cool, man. I was gonna play a song, but it's like, I'll play one before and I'll play one after, because I knew you're in your car and I don't want to, you know, just, hey, let's listen to a song, because I normally do that, but yeah, man, I'm going to play some songs on it, and thanks for doing it, man, and thanks
cool,
to Melanie,
man. Thanks,
for
brother.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time. It's been actually a long time since we've spoken in person.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? So, you know, I know you're up north of Toronto and that, and I know it's impossible to get out, but, you know.
Yeah.
I'll if do you're my around, best. Man, you know,
I'm actually
sure.
coming down that it's... way next week. I'm coming down that way to do a Lowest of the Low thing on the Dakota. They're doing
right
a box set release party thing that I'm mixing. So I'll be in the city next week, actually, to the day. So maybe
cool.
Have
sounds
a coffee.
Good, man. Well, yeah, it was. Thanks for having me on, man. It's amazing. And yeah, you got to get Bill on here, because, you know, like, you guys have some good stories, you know, to a good chat, you know, for sure. You know, he can't be shy, Bill, with you. There's no fucking way.
when Yet Another Posse went metal, we did a whole weekend in there in Bill's parents' house recording that first Yet Another Posse. And it was an experience of that I can't even explain. And I locked the keys in my van. I do remember that. I had to hire a locksmith to come. And we made G Money take his pants off, because Bill said, there's a lot of noise coming from like the snare. So You might want to take your pants off so it'll... And you can put his sticks on the... Oh, really? And we're like, no, we're just joking. You don't have to take your pants off.
Yeah, guy. I don't take my pants off, guy.
But guy, come on, guy. Well, cool, man. And before you go, I got to show you this. Hold on. I got a 5-string bass. Look at that bad boy.
Nice. Yeah. Look at that.
First one in 28 years.
I wouldn't even know what to do with that 5th string.
It's fucked. You rest your thumb on it.
Baby.
You rest your thumb on it.
That's amazing.
That's what it does.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. It's really cool. I've never owned a Music Man, and I got a Music Man 5-string. So I kind of...
That's incredible.
Double teamed it. But
it's nice when you get the bass you want. Yeah.
It feels good, too. I haven't bought a bass since 1991. That's the last bass I bought. So having buying a second bass 27 years later is it's a pretty good. I've had a good run with my other bass, so I still have it. But I needed this because I joined a country band for like 2 weeks. But so I got it.
Cool.
Man. Yeah, cool, man.
Right on, brother.
Cool.
Rock out with that bass.
Yeah, man. Good talking to you. And
good talking to you too, man. Thank you.
And that was Mr. Jesse Makovich on the Apologue Podcast. Hey, how was that? Pretty good, right? Fun times. Episode 209. Look at me. Like I said last episode, it seemed like the 10 episodes before 200 were like taking forever. And here I'm almost on 210. It's crazy. So yeah, go see my Cherry Colas Rock and Rollers. Description is in the podcast description. The instructions are in the podcast in description, so you can figure it out how to get there. It is at Cherry Cola's Rock and Rolls on December 6th. So if it's December 7th and you're hearing this, you're shit out of luck. Okay? So, everybody, thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for Jesse for doing the show. Don't forget to go to betterhelp.com/apologue and get therapy up. Don't forget to shop on Amazon by going to apologue.ca/Amazon or apologue.ca/USAmazon to shop and support the show. And thanks to the patrons. Thanks for going. You can go to Patreon too. Pledge as much as little as you want. Patreon.com/apologue. Hi. So that's it. That's the episode. Everything's done. I am putting together a best of. It'll probably come out just before New Year's. Don't have a guest host yet with me, but it'll probably be somebody that I like and somebody I respect. So that'll be there. There's a teaser for you right there. I do know that this episode, I believe, right now that's coming out is the 5th anniversary, I believe. 5th anniversary since I was doing shows. Yeah, so it'll be the 4th anniversary going into the 5th year. So the 4th year, I've been doing podcasts for 4 years, everybody. Thanks to this episode. And thanks to you. Thanks for listening to the show. That's why I keep doing it. I like doing it. I like talking to people. I like people that listen to it. I like the feedback. I like when people tell me how much it's great or how much it sucks. Okay? You can do that too. You can get in touch with me if you want to be on the show. Appaluck.ca/contact. And tell your friends. Okay? Have a good night. Have a good day. Have a good week. Bye.